Weight loss solutions are not one-size-fits-all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert-guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone. The Bastards are back for this early week edition of the podcast. We are downloaded in over 30 countries across the globe and available on every major media platform. For everyone listening on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show if you have not already. Nothing you do will help us more immensely. A quick disclaimer for any first-time listeners. This is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. The Red Sox just wrapped up a four-game set against the Chicago White Sox, splitting the series 2-2. Boston is currently in first place atop the AL East, 2.5 games ahead of the Tampa Bay Rays. The Yankees, however, are an American League worst at 5-10. All is quiet out of Fenway in regards to news. Some players did receive their first COVID vaccine shot today as they await the Toronto Blue Jays to come to town. News from around the league, the Minnesota Twins are expected to resume play on Tuesday after postponing 2 games against the Anaheim Angels due to multiple positive COVID tests. The National League MVP favorite, Ronald Acuna Jr., is likely headed to the injured list due to a mild abdominal strain from Sunday's Braves-Cubs game. Red starter Sonny Gray has been activated from the injured list after dealing with some back problems. The 31-year-old will start Friday's game in St. Louis against the Cardinals. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Lewiston, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. Joining me tonight from Westwood, Massachusetts, Jason Kelly. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing a lot better than my Yankees World Series pick. Holy crap, am I looking wrong on that one? I'm still hoping for my Aaron Judge MVP pick, but I don't know. I might be just striking out all across the board here. It's looking rough.
You know, I was just thinking about that before we come on, and I was like, it's much better to be a Red Sox podcaster this year. And how lucky were we to only have to sit through 2 months of that last year? They might be sitting through 6.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, I'll take a COVID season that sucks over a full regular season that sucks, for sure.
Yeah, just absolutely brutal. And also, I'm terrible at remembering this, but I'm trying to get better. Jason, your Twitter handle, in case your haters want to get in touch with you.
Yeah, my Twitter handle is probably the hardest to remember in your defense, but it's Color of the Iris. And that's color spelt the old English way, O-U-R, instead of just O-R. But it's Color of the Iris. So if you want to yell at me for being an Aaron Judge homeboy, then feel free.
Also joining us tonight from the city of Providence, Rhode Island, is Charlie Smith. Charlie, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. Like that game was super fun to watch. You saw a couple of batters, you know, hitters pitching, and that's very seldom. But it's funny because I think it was last episode or the episode before that, we're like, man, you hear Terry just in my best Terry impression. I'm going to look like a real genius because I didn't pick the Yankees to even make the playoffs at all.
I did not.
And like, here I did we not. Are, and the Yankees are the, it's the opposite of last year, where last year we were the joke. And this year, now the Yankees, unfortunately, are the joke. And, you know, we talk about this, like where I work and where other people work too. And it's like, oh, do you guys remember back in the, it feels like back in the day when the Red Sox and Yankees had a rivalry, because here I am looking at, four of the six of us picked the Yankees to win the East. It was only Terry and Joe, but we sat there like, those idiots. Like, they think those guys are not going to, you know, it's just unbelievable. Just, it's been such a fun season so far, you know? It's been fun.
And a bunch of you had them going to the World Series, I believe.
I think I definitely did. Yeah.
It was Jason. I definitely Jason did. Andrew had the Yankees. Joe, Zach, and myself had the White Sox.
Okay.
Terry, you had the Indians.
Hey, hey, stay tuned on that. But
I mean, holy crap, man, that's insane.
Yeah, we'll see. We're going to get into some White Sox here. Charlie, actually, where can they find you on Twitter?
Nice and easy, Smith_MLB.
Your ancestors took the easy way out by choosing Smith, but.
I know. Let me tell you, I don't know. I don't know how I got this lucky, but you know, whenever people tell me, oh yeah, this is my email, I'm like, yeah, you're lucky. You don't have to worry about numbers at the end of it. You ass. I always have numbers at the end of everything I have to do because otherwise it just doesn't happen. How I scored Smith_MLB. I don't know. That's insane.
You got it though. I was also just thinking, if you ever do go into the witness protection program, your name's so common, you might not even need to change it. Just moved to Wyoming or something.
That's true.
Or Idaho. Yeah. So anyway, we will get right into it. Studs and duds for this Chicago White Sox series. And there is a ton to go over. So, Jason, you are in the leadoff spot. Who is your stud for the series?
Yeah, I'm going with the guy who pitched earlier today. I'm going with Nathan Eovaldi. Because he pitched like an ace, and he's been unbelievable so far this season. And the ERA is, in my opinion, a little bit skewed because it's 3.04, which is still really good. But he gave up a few runs today that were inherited by the relief pitching. But it is what it is. Eovaldi so far on the year is he's on pace to have his best career year. And I know it's early. It's definitely early. But you know, 17 and a third pitched, 14 strikeouts, only 4 walks, no home runs allowed, and his whip is under 1 for like the first time in his whole career, except for 1 year in 2018. But he's been awesome. And it's not just the numbers, it's the way he looks when he's pitching. And it's the fact that he's not just going up there and hurling 98 mile an hour fastballs past everybody to succeed. He's mixing in different pitches. You know, he's mixing in the curveball. He's mixing in the slider. He's throwing that cut fastball a lot more. It's making him more deceptive, and it's getting hitters off balance. Like, hitters look uncomfortable in the box against Eovaldi. It's one of the few times I can actually say that about Nathan Eovaldi so far. He really has been the ace of this staff so far this season. And granted, like I said, it is early. And Eduardo Rodriguez, I think, is still kind of battling his way back. I do think that he, you know, is going to sharpen into form as we go forward here. So, you know, at the end of the day, this is a perfect problem to have for the Red Sox. It's like, who's your ace? Is it Eovaldi or is it Erod or is it Sale when he eventually comes back? Either way, you've got a strong rotation. You really do. I mean, maybe the back end has a few question marks, but then you've got guys like Garrett Whitlock who may be worming their way into that situation anyway. If Eovaldi at the front is pitching like he does, you know, so far this, you know, the first half of the season, like that's huge. And again, this is a guy that we all said he was overpaid at the time. I think the last couple of years that was certainly true, but this year he's earning his money. He looks fantastic. He looks the best he's ever looked. So hopefully he keeps it up. Hopefully he stays healthy. That's always been the biggest question mark with him throughout his career is the health. But I love that he's mixing in different pitches. I love that he's just he went deeper into today's game than I think any of us expected him to. And I love that he's just not going up there and throwing out of his ass and just trying to throw 99 past guys. He's mixing in different pitches and he's working counts and he's really getting these hitters off balance. He looks awesome. So today was a great performance. He's been the guy that sort of emerged that we all sort of looked at and go, okay, we didn't expect this out of him. And for this team to succeed this year, for this team to be like a playoff team and a deep playoff team, that's what you need. You need guys like Eovaldi, guys that you weren't expecting to really emerge to do just that. So far, it looks like he's doing just that. It's been awesome. So he was absolutely my stud after this weekend.
Charlie.
So a couple of stats, because anyone that knows me knows that I really like numbers. Numbers are big. That's good. Numbers are low. That's, you know, that's bad depending on what stat, right? So his last 10 strikeout performance was August 9th of 2020. His last appearance where he threw 100 pitches or more, it happened to be 100 pitches, and that was September 22nd of 2019. So we're looking at quite a long while. His last seven inning start, two starts ago. So he's already doing quality starts. He's had two so far this season. Why is this important? Because we're curious to know if we're going to get 150 innings out of somebody like that. He's already done impeccable work so far. He's got a 3-1 start, as Jason already mentioned. He's having a fantastic start to the season. I would love to say this is how it's going to continue. And I have no reason to believe that it's going to go wrong. I've been foolish or had foolish guesses all season. Like I was one of those low 70 win total for the season. And Boston is making me look real foolish. Last year, not so much. This year, yes. But Eovaldi was able to go as deep as he was because the offense did what they did. He also walked no batters. That's dumb. I am so happy to see what I'm seeing out of this, because when you have a question mark on who's your ace when Chris Sale isn't there, that's interesting. That's curious. And then when Sale's there, Evaldi's there, when Tanner Houck is, you know, firing all cylinders and he's getting run support, Martin Perez has like a good start. I mean, I don't think Martin Perez is going to still be in the same circle, but you have more than three formidable starts. You have three plus. Super happy with what I saw from him. Super happy.
Jason nailed it. Nathan Eovaldi is the undisputed ace of this pitching staff right now. We're going to get into Pivetta later on. We know Richards has been up and down. We're still kind of feeling him out. Martin Perez finally in this series kind of got tuned up a little bit. Not bad, but it wasn't his best start of the year. And Rodriguez has looked good, but he's labored at times. Nathan Eovaldi's been none of that. He has been consistently good every time out. And one of my concerns coming into the season, aside from obviously injury concerns, I don't think we're ever going to be completely comfortable with his health, but my other concern was, what is he going to look like against the lineup the second time through, the third time through? Is he going to start to get tattooed? And that's not happening. He's making adjustments. And today, a lot of the strikeouts came the second time through the order and into the third time. So he's just been absolutely electric. And Jason mentions the contract. should we have given him 4 years, $68 million? No, that was an overpay by Dave Dombrowski. But in a weird way, it's kind of like a reverse trend with him. The painful years were early, and the painless years are seemingly at the back end of the contract. So, you know, we have him for this year. We'll have him for next year. And I like what I'm seeing. He's the one guy who goes in there, doesn't give up runs early, doesn't fall behind in counts. He's just in complete command from the first inning until whatever his last inning is. And that's nice to see. It's nice to see. Any other thoughts on Eovaldi?
No, I'm glad that he's under contract for next year too, because if he does pitch the full season and he's healthy, and he kind of turns into a solid number two, then there you go. That's one less problem to worry about. So
I'm just going to say, I hope no one forgets that Terry was the one that said we could have like an $18 million reliever. and he's just going out throwing six plus striking out 10. But here's the thing, at the time, the injury was a concern. He's had an extended break to kind of get healthy, get that ship righted. I'm curious to know what would be happening right now to our team and to him, especially if last year was a full season, because the body does break down for somebody like that. If there's a lot of innings, a lot of mileage, too much taxing on that, it's just not good. But last year was it was an anomaly for so many reasons, but it ended up working out to our benefit, because if, you know, he's not at 100% health and it's the whole season, or he's doing whatever for a whole season, I don't know if we're going to see him at 100% right now. 100 pitches, I'm going to say he's close to 100%, because this is like, I mean, the only thing I'm not hearing is like the grunt every single pitch, like against LA. Like, that's the only thing I'm not hearing every pitch. And I miss that, because that was the fire. Like, okay, 101, 102, 100, you're just not going to hit it. So
I don't
keep it up, man.
I don't want to see him throwing 102. Just keep it 97, 98, 99. We're not gonna
do whatever
blow
you
up.
Need to do to stay healthy, man. I don't care. If he's 95, 96,
that's the thing. Like, he doesn't need to be a Roldis Chapman out there. Just like Terry said, throw 96 to 98 and don't overexert yourself and give us 6-7 innings. That's all we need. It's perfect.
Yeah, and fortunately, we do have the depth if something does happen, but I'll still be extremely surprised if he does exceed 150 innings. He hasn't done it in a while, and Charlie makes a good point. Maybe the soft and light workload of 2020 kind of helps that, but yeah. And another thing in my own defense, Charlie, about the reliever thing, the $18 million reliever, he looked like crap in a couple of those spring training
starts.
But more than that, I was desperately trying to get Tanner Houck into the rotation, and that was my genius idea.
I would do anything. Honestly, I didn't like Pivetta in there. I would have said keep Eovaldi. You know, I saw though, because while you're paying him $18 million, what's the best thing for the team? At the time, it looked like, okay, maybe, because we didn't know what was going to happen with Whitlock. Stud. We didn't know what was going to happen with a bunch of other players too. So it made sense. It was a good fit. I didn't like Pivetta. I still don't like Pivetta. I still like Houck. I want Houck in there. Yeah. I think Houck is going to be the three next year. That's me though.
Yeah. And I want Eovaldi in the rotation every fifth day, even if there's consequences later, because we've got to put some wins in the bank as we've been doing. Eventually we're going to lose 6 out of 8. It happens to everyone at some point. So
of course.
Just love to get, you know, more wins in the bank. But good to see with Nathan Eovaldi. Charlie, who is your stud for the series?
Kiki Hernandez, no question. Entered the series hitting .216 with a homer and 4 RBIs and literally doubled his numbers up. Left the series hitting .269. So he ended up going 7 for 16, 3 singles, 2 doubles, 2 homers, 3 RBIs. 6 runs scored, 1 walk, and a couple of strikeouts, had 3 total. Game one, he also had that RBI with 2 outs. That was huge in the 6th inning for him, because this is someone who needs to start getting fired up, getting started, because there were a lot of people on Twitter, myself included, saying, dude, why do we have Kiki Hernandez in the 1 hole? dude, he can't get on base. Like, what the hell? And then it was one of those hold my beer moments, hitting almost 500. So what I absolutely liked was finally we're seeing that investment pay its return now. We're seeing a return on that investment that we made for this guy. We haven't even hit the halfway mark last year as far as his numbers and metrics are concerned. He's already got four doubles. He had eight last year. He's played 17 games this year, 48 last year. Had five home runs all of last season, three so far this year. 230 batting average last year, 269 so far. I'd love to see a couple more walks out of him, but you know what? This was one of the easiest studs to pick in the series because when you have a four-hit game, a two-hit game, you basically do everything you possibly can to get on base. Even game three, didn't get a hit, but he still got a walk. You know, like this guy's doing whatever he can do to get on base. Finally, we're seeing it after a quiet last series. It's starting to pay off.
Jason, thoughts on Kike?
Yeah, this guy was a dud of mine, not last week, but I think 2 weeks ago on this show. I labeled him as a dud, and I was not impressed at the start of the year. I felt like, much like Charlie said, I was one of those guys on Twitter being like, why is Kike hitting off or leading off for us? He's not a leadoff hitter. He's, you know, doesn't have the discipline, doesn't have the track record. He's looked a lot better. He's starting to slowly pick it up. And I do like what he brought to the series this weekend. He showed a lot of power. He had a sort of Green Monster special home run today, which was always good to see. But I do think that Hernandez is going to be extremely valuable to this team as long as he continues to perform like this. Now, whether or not the leadoff spot is the perfect spot for him, I don't know. I still have questions about that. I would prefer that he take a few more walks or at least show a little more plate discipline if he's going to be hitting leadoff. But I love the versatility. I love the energy that he brings. You know, you can't deny that. He's just kind of a heart and soul guy that there's something intangible about him that's like he just brings a certain swagger to this team that, you know, we've been missing. Certainly we're missing it last year. We missed it in 2019. And if he continues to pick it up offensively and he shows that he can get on base at a regular, you know, output like that, great. I have no problem with him hitting leadoff then. You know, maybe he's just one of those guys that he can be a leadoff hitter without having to be a guy that takes a lot of walks. If he makes contact and gets on base and scores a lot of runs, perfect. Because for this offense, you need Hernandez to set the table, right? That's what you want your leadoff hitter to do. That's exactly what he did today. He set the table against Giolito by going deep. I mean, Lucas Giolito, I think he was not expecting Kike Hernandez to take him deep right out of the chute. And he set the tone and the offense picked it up after that. And they, you know, the runs just kept flowing. And that's how we won. He's looked a lot better. I'm a lot more impressed. The defense looks solid no matter where he plays. So, you know what? He was a dud for me a couple weeks ago. I hand up. I was wrong. You know, maybe at that time he deserved to be, but right now he absolutely belongs in the stud category because he looked really good. I'm impressed.
No complaints from me. He had a great series, had the most hits of anyone. Like Charlie said, drove in runs in three out of the four games, and you're starting to see the power. He had a very slow start to the season, and his numbers, like we said, don't really suggest he is a leadoff guy, but he is kind of rising to the occasion. And we've had problems identifying a leadoff guy since Ellsbury left. We had Mookie leading off at one point, and then we moved him to the middle of the order, but then we had to move him back. And then in 2020, Verdugo just kind of inherited it and did well with it. And he's doing well out of the two hole right now. And I'm just looking at my score sheet here. And whether we like it or not, he's the guy. He's going to have to start there. The only person I can maybe see making a strong case for it eventually, and it's still a stretch right now, is maybe Christian Arroyo. But I think for now it's Kike Hernandez's spot, and maybe one other guy if he gets called up. Jaron Duran. He's got leadoff written all over him. Hit two home runs. It was either today or yesterday. Had a good weekend at the alternate site.
They were showing the homers too. It looks good. I don't think he's sure, but I think they were going to hold him back until 2022. I think that's the diplomatic choice.
Yeah, they might as well hold him back just real quick at this point, because obviously the Red Sox are in a spot right now where it's like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So, you know what? They're flowing along right now. Keep Duran in the minors. Let him get better. Let's wait on him.
Yeah, we've got the depth and versatility. So, but that is my upset special. If it happens, I'm gonna brag about it in August or whatever. I'm just kidding. I'm going to continue to brag about my Yankees not making the playoffs, though, all year long.
That one I won't blame you on. Yeah.
getting into – oh, I guess I'm up. Now, the obvious choice is J.D. Martinez, because he had a hit in every game. But I'm sick of picking J.D. Martinez. I'm going to go with a guy who just – isn't getting enough love, and part of the reason for that might be because he doesn't have a home run yet. But Xander Bogaerts, 5-for-11 in the series, is hitting .386 on the season, and it's like, what? That's the quietest .386 I've ever seen in my life. It just very quietly getting it done. And looking at Devers in the five hole, I'm like, why would you put Devers in the five hole? That's a three spot or a four spot bat from a dude that just rakes. But I'm seeing it now. I'm seeing it because Xander's getting on base. He's getting on base, and Devers is driving him home too. So it's working out, and I don't think he's getting nearly enough love from Red Sox fans right now. Jason, thoughts on Bogaerts?
Yeah, he's much like his personality, his on-field play kind of reflects it. He's just kind of a quiet leader out there. he just goes up, he does his job, and he performs really well. And we all sort of at the end of the year go, oh, wow, he actually had a really good year. It's like, well, of course he did. Yeah, and Xander Bogaerts, he's pretty much been, ever since he's been a Red Sox, like, he's been consistent. There was that one season where they stupidly tried to move him to third base and he didn't do very well. Apart from that, Xander Bogaerts has been a star on this team. He's star Red Sox. And you mentioned Devers. Like, Devers is showing the power, which is great. We want Rafael Devers to show the power because ultimately that's what makes him valuable. But he's hitting .271. You know, Devers will show power, but he'll also, you know, overswing at times. He'll strike out a lot at times. In the field, he's very unreliable because basically every throw that he makes from the third base bag is going to skip at least once, maybe twice. It's like he's skipping stones out there. Bogaerts is much more steady defensively, and he's a steady bat. Like the game where he had four hits, like, yeah, sure, one of them was kind of a jam shot bloop into right field, but you know what? When you're going well, that's the kind of hits you get. I have no questions about Bogaerts. Like, that's one of those guys that you always look at and you go, you know what? I don't have to worry about him. He's going to be fine. I'm not worried at all that Xander Bogaerts has zero home runs. He's one of the few guys on this team that doesn't have a home run yet, and I'm not the least bit concerned because I know at some point he's going to get into a groove and he's going to run into one and he's going to smash it, and he'll probably hit 20 to 25 home runs this year. That's not even a doubt in my mind. So, you know, the no home runs does not concern me at all. I know he had a late start to spring training because of health issues, but he looks like he's just fine. Defensively, he looks good. He has good at bat still. You know, again, just steady, quiet leader. That's the kind of guy you want hitting in the middle of your lineup. You know, no drama, no BS. He's still going to be one of the best players on your team at the end of the year. So, yeah, Bogaerts he's finding his groove. The power will come. He's still a centerpiece of this team, no doubt about it.
I forgot to mention that kind of blue pit. It was deep into the outfield, right near the first base line, but yes. And it ended up being a ground rule double. But two runs came in on that, and that's what broke open that first game for us to win it 7-4. That mm-hmm. happened late in the game, so definitely a huge hit by Bogarts. Charlie, your thoughts on Bogarts?
You know, Jason hit it on the head. It's a very quiet 386 batting average. And if you have to look at it on paper, the Red Sox, while he's not hitting home runs, there are plenty of other guys that are still hitting bombs. And what's nice is that they're not concerned about big-time baseball. You don't see five guys at the dish trying to hit home runs every single time. They're playing small ball. Devers getting on base with singles, doubles. You see Bogarts, who's got 22, 23 hits on the season. Only a couple of them are extra base hits. Xander Bogarts has as many multi-hit games as the Yankees do wins. That's dumb. He's got 2 4-hit games, 2 3-hit games, a 2-hit game. He had 2 doubles in the series. He only played 3 games. But, I mean, if you're doing all this right, I don't care. Like, I mean, the rest of the team is still doing everything they need to do. No, he's not scoring any runs, but he's still getting on base. He's doing what he needs to do. He's moving people over. He's doing what he – it's hard to complain. But you'd love to see home runs. There's going to be a lot of people that kind of complain about the fact that he isn't home runs. I'll say it too. Like, we've now seen, what, 5 series, and he hasn't hit one yet? It feels weird towards the end of May – or sorry, April, that he hasn't hit one. But at the same time – I'm really not concerned. This is the best team in the American League right now. So clearly stuff is going the right direction. So if it means that you continue hitting singles and doubles and other people are doing other things, I don't care. I don't care.
And he's slugging almost 500 right now. So that's not terrible. So I think Jason's right. The home runs will start to happen. And once they do start to happen, it'll be a pretty regular thing. So I just mentioned, we'll get into the honorable mentions now, J.D. Martinez. Now, he should have been a stud. He had a hit in every, all 4 of the games. He was 6-for-15 on the series. Did not have a single hit against Minnesota. Went hitless the whole series and then was able to turn it right back up when they got home to play the White Sox. So that's good. We're not really seeing a prolonged slump out of him. He hit a home run today and, had multiple games with runs driven in. So continues to be one of the best hitters in the league. He's ranked 3rd right now. The only reason he's not ahead of Mike Trout is because he hasn't drawn as many walks. Mike Trout has an insane over 500 on base percentage, but he's got more hits than Trout. He's got more home runs than Trout. And is just playing out of his mind. This could be the best year of J.D. Martinez's career. It literally could be in his age 33 season. Any thoughts on him?
I'm not particularly surprised, only because when you think of all the factors about that, like, you know, Cora's back. It's a full season. Supposedly, he actually prepared for this year. He gets his little pet back. And, oh, by the way, there's a little small thing of he's technically in a contract year. Isn't that interesting that when he can opt out and he has everything in place, oh, all of a sudden J.D. Martinez is one of the best hitters in baseball. Obviously, that's sort of a negative way to look at it. But, you know, I would not be shocked if towards the end of the season we hear about, well, maybe he's not going to come back. Maybe he's going to take that opt out because he's having a career year and he's going to go for that one last big 5 or 6 year contract that some stupid team will give him because teams are dumb. The Yankees, that's a Brian Cashman special. A guy in his mid 30s who wants a 6 year contract. Yeah. Sign Cashman up. He'll do it. So it's great to see. I hope it keeps up. You need J.D. Martinez if you want to be a contending team this year, which the Red Sox obviously do. But beware of that contract situation. That opt-out is looming larger and larger by the day as he continues to rake.
Well, if he keeps raking, then so be it, even if he doesn't come back.
So this is, you know, we're talking about him having one of the best statistical seasons so far. And I would agree so far. It is only a couple weeks into the season. The extra base numbers are incredible. He's had, what, 7 doubles, which I think is tops in the league. He also has 6 home runs, which is number 1 in the American League, number 2 overall, only to Acuna. He leads all of Major League Baseball with 20 RBIs. He's 9th overall with a batting average, only a couple ticks behind Xander Bogaerts, 6th best in the American League. Xander's 5th best in the American League. What else do we want to know? Oh, yeah. He keeps mashing. He was at one point the only player that was getting an extra base hit a game. Like, it was just, it was stupid. Oh, yeah. Some players you hope to see like a couple extra base hits in a series. He was averaging a double a game. It was just dumb. So, yeah, walk year helps, but IDGAF. It's going to keep being one of those seasons for him. I don't think it's going to stop. I think you might see a couple series where he might have like a fluff week, or, you know, where he throws up on his shoes. But you know what? I'd rather have him have one of those than all of what we saw in 2020, which is just disgusting. It was the only thing that kept coming to my mind when I saw him come to the dish. Cause it was like, he forgot how to hit. It was like Andrew Benintendi too. There was no words for it. And now it's like, okay, now we're starting to see why we paid you all this money. And it looks like an underpay by the numbers he's putting up. So I'm hoping he keeps this up. He may very well have a great statistical year. Do I think he's going to hit 120 RBIs? I don't think so. Do I think he's going to hit 30 home runs? Sure, absolutely. But I mean, I think Andrew was the one that said, yeah, we might see, you know, 80% of what he can do. I think we'll see more than that if it keeps up at this point. You know, like Andrew was right in saying that. I mean, there's no way he was going to do 2020 2.0. I mean, Jesus, that would have been terrible. But we wanted to see something, and we've seen it. So let's just keep this going.
He might give you 120% literally of what we expected. Another guy hitting well, Alex Verdugo, 5 for 13 on the series. Hit a home run today, was 3 for 4. Had hits in 3 out of the 4 games, but continues to be solid up towards the top of the lineup. Getting into some pitching now. One guy, I kind of pointed out a pattern about him. Josh Taylor has been scoreless in his last 4 appearances. I think a few of them haven't been quite for a full inning, but so he's been used kind of sparingly or situationally. But he's faced 11 batters and only given up 2 hits in his last 4 outings. So this could kind of play into the pattern he's had in the past where he gets knocked around the first few appearances and then kind of settles in. So it's good to see. It's good to see. And I'm getting a little bit more confident when he comes out and I'm like, oh, this is an automatic 2 spot, you know, or whatever, you know, that he was putting up. So, and he's one of our 2 lefties. So it's really important they get him squared away. And it looks like they have. Another guy I'll bring up real quick. We can discuss them together. Adam Ottavino finally looked filthy in his outing in game 1. That was the only game he appeared in for the series. Pitched a full inning. All 3 batters were struck out. He struck out the side. The slider was nasty. It had tons of movement. There were balls that weren't looking like strikes that were just hitting the zone, you know, right as they got to the plate. And nobody had a chance against him. He was just extremely dominant in that outing. So hopefully this is the turnaround for him. That way we can keep rubbing that into the faces of Yankees fans. But any thoughts on those 2 relievers?
Yeah, Josh Taylor has become the Red Sox personal version of Jesse Orozco of the yesteryears. Yes, I'm talking about the guy that pitched 4 different decades for a plethora of different teams. He comes in for 1 guy, 2 guys, and that's it. Because the first 3 games, as Jason would say, just kind of threw up on his shoe. He had an ERA of 45, very fluffy, not really pretty. And he's since brought that ERA back down to a, still not pretty, but a lot better than what it was. 9.53, last 5 appearances, he's combined to do 2 2/3, allowed 2 hits, 1 walk, 3 Ks, or 2 strikeouts, excuse me. much more manageable, serviceable. And you know what? Sometimes you just need that guy to pitch to one dude. And if that's all you end up doing, Josh, because that's all we can get out of you, then you know what? That's fine, because you know what? We're winning. So I don't care. It becomes one of those things that it's not what's the best thing for you. It's what's the best thing for the team. And if it means you come out for six pitches or two guys or whichever comes first, that's it. That's your job. We only have two guys. If it means that that's your job, then that's it. Done.
Jason, thoughts?
Yeah, almost had an immaculate inning. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, go, Jason.
No, it's. I mean, that's it. Ottavino is who I was going to harp on. Like he looked incredible in this outing. That was his best stuff that he's displayed all season. So that breaking ball was working for him. Like Charlie said, almost had an immaculate inning, and he looked confident. He looked much more comfortable there. So they need him. They need him to be a stable force and back into that bullpen. I mistakenly thought that he was going to be the closer. Matt Parnes told me to shove that where the sun don't shine, and Ottavino will probably be more like an eighth inning, you know, against right-handers kind of guy, which is fine. That's great. That's best case scenario for the Red Sox. So, yeah, just another reason to laugh at the Yankees. Thanks for Adam Ottavino too. Awesome.
Garrett Whitlock also hadn't pitched in a while, but came in and basically finished out the game after Eovaldi exited with 2 2/3. Didn't give up a single hit, 2 strikeouts, so good to see there. Using him kind of sparingly, so that's kind of curious, but we'll see how that continues to develop. And actually, I guess on this side of it, before we do go into the duds, I do want to talk about Tanner Houck real quick. Not a dazzling outing by any means, but he did go 4 1/3, gave up 6 hits, 3 earned runs. One of those was a home run in the very first pitch of the game. And I was impressed by the fact he was still able to settle in there and pitch his game and not be rattled by Tim Anderson taking him deep on the first pitch. So that was good to see. And I also want to point out this one thing. We'll get to Pivetta in a minute, but you know, watching a guy like Pivetta, extremely stressful. It's a very stressful outing. We see that with Garrett Richards as well. I have a lot of confidence in Houck. I'm not at the edge of the cliff thinking, oh my God, it's about to completely unravel. You know, he's a guy who's gaming and keeping us in the game. And I like what I see. I like what I see out of him. And that was a lineup that could have easily got him out of there in the second inning if things really weren't going well. And he toughed it out and went 4 1/3. So thoughts on Houck?
Yeah, I think Houck looks really sharp. I do like his confidence. I wish he was a little more polished. You know, we talked about it coming into this year. Is like, is he going to expand on that arsenal at all? Is he going to add more pitches? Is he going to become more refined? And he just became sort of more confident, which isn't bad. I mean, that's fine. But he didn't necessarily become more polished. You know, like there's a difference between the two. He definitely has confidence. His stuff is really good. I still wish he kind of added another pitch. I wish he had more to work with, because I do feel like, you know, after teams start to get used to him for a while, he's going to get exposed. And I think that home run to Anderson sort of proved it. Tim Anderson went up there thinking, hey, this guy's going to throw me a fastball first pitch. Like I'm pretty much assured of that because it's his favorite pitch. Sure enough, he did. And Anderson took it the other way and hit it up. And other hitters are going to pick up on that. So I like Houck. I like him a lot. I just wish he was a little more polished before I say, yep, you should absolutely put him in the rotation over anybody else. But overall, they've got something there. They've definitely got talent there. They just need to, you know, they need to refine it just a little bit.
I'm still going to say that I really like Houck. I mean, here's the thing. It wasn't like Pivetta where you saw a lack of control. 74% of his pitches were strikes. Still struck out two guys. The home run, yep, it sucks because sometimes that rattles you. You see a pitcher give up home runs on back-to-back pitches, back-to-back-to-back pitches. And then for a guy who's been in the league for 6 minutes. You know, he had three career starts last year, only a couple this year. Did not get the run support because obviously it was only a 7-inning game for the first game of the doubleheader. They lost 3-2. But you know what? 3 runs and 4 1/3 for a guy who's had less than 10 career starts, a couple hits. He's still not walking, guys. He has great control. Just what Jason said. Get another pitch in your arsenal. You can't survive on 2+ pitches. You need 3 if you're a starter. If you're a reliever, yeah, you can survive off 1 or 2. I mean, if you have the best pitch in baseball of that pitch, yeah, you can survive. There's a particular closer who played for a team with stripes that had only 1 pitch, and that's all he threw. And he was the best ever as a closer. So, starter, you can't live on 2. And just what you said, you know, Jason mentioned it. First pitch, soft fastball. They're sitting fastball. If he can incorporate something else into that mix and not throw fastball, I think you're going to see something pretty special.
I just was looking it up. He has been working on a splitter, and he only threw it 3 times during the game. So that's kind of what he's hopefully going to work on and mix that in a little bit more. But yeah, we'll get into him in the coming shows. But I wasn't at all discouraged by what I saw, and we lost that game 3-2. With a little bit of run support, it could have been obviously a much more positive outcome. So getting over to the duds of the series, Jason, who's your dud?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Franchy Cordero as my dud. And I know that might be a little surprising to some people. He did drive in 2 runs today, which is very nice. That was good to see. It's good to see him go the opposite way and drive in a couple of runs. He also made a lot of stupid mistakes in today's game. And he's kind of just it led me to think of him in a larger picture, like throughout the whole season. So today he drove in 2 runs. He had 2 hits in the game. For the series, he was 2 for 8. He struck out 4 times. And let's not forget that he also struck out against a second baseman later in the game, which I get it. It was garbage time. The game was pretty much over, but you were up by 6-7 runs. Like, you're still looking to pad the lead. And for a guy who I've been told is, well, wait till he runs into one. Oh my God, he can hit him as far as David Ortiz has. Well, he struck out against a second baseman, and in 33 at bats, he has 0 home runs this year. He's one of the few Red Sox players that does not have a home run. I think it's like him, Bogarts, Plawecki, and there might be one other guy. Dalbec, yeah, Mr. Powerhouse himself. I think those are the only guys who don't have home runs on this team so far this year. So for a guy who, because again, like I heard it all during spring training, oh, he looks like David Ortiz. All the Pete Abrahams of the world, the mastermind reporter there, Pete Abraham. Well, I talked to rival executives who told me that Franchy Cordero reminds them of David Ortiz. Okay. Well, he has no home runs. He's hitting in somewhere in the 270s, and he struck out against a second baseman today. So I don't know. Not looking like David Ortiz to me. He sometimes shows flashes defensively. He threw out a runner earlier in the series that, he looks like he has a good arm. But he also looks like he has no clue how to play the Green Monster. We saw that in today's game. He just has no idea how to play the monster yet. It made me miss Manny Ramirez a little bit. I was like, wow, at least Manny knows how to play the wall. I don't think this guy does. He made a terrible base running mistake too when Dalbec lined out against the DH, I think it was, because Bobby Dalbec can't even hit a home run against a DH who's pitching. And he lined out to short, and Cordero just bolted. Now, I don't know if he forgot how many outs there were or whatever, but he got doubled up. I look at Cordero, and he's a 4A player. He's a 4A player who Alex Cora is giving basically every day playing time to. Unless there's a left-hander on the mound, Franchy Cordero's in there. And I think that the only reason Red Sox fans aren't getting on him more is because he was traded for Andrew Benintendi, who's actually been worse than Cordero, if you can even believe that. Benintendi has not had the Benny bounce back season that, you know, all the Red Sox fans hoped that he would. He's hitting like 216, and he doesn't have any homers either. And he's actually had 51 at bats because he plays literally every day. So I don't know. Between like Cordero and Renfro, and like that corner outfield spot just is looking pretty weak. And so far they've gotten away with it. They've gotten away with it because the rest of the lineup is mashing. Everyone's mashing. It's like, it's only Cordero and Dalbec that aren't hitting. And because of that, everyone kind of ignores it. Like, oh, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. Pete Abraham told me he was going to be David Ortiz in spring training. He'll be okay. Well, he's not looking like David Ortiz. He's looking like a 4A player who's playing too much. And I hope at some point, if the Red Sox are really in this year, if they're really going to contend, that at some point, middle of the summer, Kyan Bloom makes a move to upgrade that corner outfield spot and get someone in there who, you know, knows how many outs there are when he's running on the base pass, or someone who doesn't strike out, you know, foolishly against a second baseman who's pitching. That would be nice. I know I might be asking for a lot, but I don't know. You're a major league hitter. You're facing a second baseman who's throwing softballs. Like, can you maybe make contact? I don't know. So I'm not a Cordero guy yet. I know a lot of people are, but he's got to show me a lot more because he's getting a lot of playing time for a guy who I think is a borderline minor leaguer, major leaguer, you know, in between. He's 4A at best.
And I think when he got caught in the base pass, I think he was just being complacent. That was the impression I got. He just completely complacent.
Yeah.
But Charlie, go ahead. Thoughts on Cordero?
So you already hit on one point, the fact that people are going to be happier with him than with Benintendi because Benintendi's still MIA, call Carmen Sandiego, do what you need to do, but we're still trying to find him. Apparently he's in Kansas City, but I don't know. I don't think anyone else does either, which is kind of sad. First two games, he did have a nice assist, so I'll take that. Got on base, did have a couple singles, but you did mention something, and it kind of struck a chord because I was like, oh my God, I wonder if he's going to hit this. Hasn't hit a home run yet. Plawecki hasn't hit one. Xander hasn't hit one. Forget who else you mentioned. Those four guys, I think, that you mentioned. But Franchi Cordero, Bobby Dalbec, of course. How could we forget Bobby Dalbec? Mm-hmm. May 20th, 2009. May 20th, 2009. Almost 2 months of baseball went by before David Ortiz decided to bless us with his first home run. And people call him David Ortiz Jr. And I really like the swing. People gave me flack for it earlier this spring when I was saying, you know, he's got a really fluid swing. It's like a junior Ken Griffey Jr. version. And someone said, wait, you're comparing that to Ken Griffey Jr.? He's like, just watch the follow through. It's really pretty. It's really nice. And if it goes the right way, he's not even going to have to look at it. It's just automatically going to be gone. May 20th, 2009. And no, Franchi Cordero is not David Ortiz in any way, shape, or form. Maybe later on. Who knows? But right now, I'm going to just count my blessings. 2021 has been insane. No one thought that we were going to be in first place in the American League. No one thought we were going to be running the division. The only team that's better than us is the team that basically bought the 2021 World Series, the Dodgers. And we've still outscored them for the year, which is stupid. So you know what? If it takes him a little while longer, I'm okay with that. He's hitting 270. He's not playing every day. He's doing his job. I think he's going to learn his position a little bit better. I don't think it's going to be like a Rosa Reina playing right field trying to figure out, okay, like he needs a GPS to figure out where to go. I'm going to remain calm and be positive in this circumstance because I really do want him to succeed. I really do. Because on top of the fact that he's got one of the cooler names in Boston up there with like Hernandez, I really can't wait because I feel like his first home run is going to be insane. It's going to be like 500 feet to deep right center field and people are going to be like, oh, that's out. We're not even going to look at it. Just throw another ball back to the pitcher's mound. It's just going to be gone. I think that's going to be what happens the first time. And it'll probably be in the next series. And when it happens, I'm going to be looking at you, Jason. Because we're gonna be talking about this one too. I'm just waiting patiently. I'm not gonna completely poo-poo him. Didn't have a great series. That's okay. We'll see what happens next time.
I don't really have too strong of feelings. I mean, all your points are pretty valid. But what I will say is he was lucky today that we had the benefit of a big lead, because those mistakes would have been a lot more glaring had we been behind, and it essentially cost us a game. So hopefully Cora just works his magic and kind of rounds him into form. And he hasn't really had a full major league season yet. So hopefully by the time July rolls around, we'll have a much different narrative, you know, on Cordero. Charlie, who is your dud for the series?
Oh, this one was too easy. Pavetta. You know, I'm talking about the fact that we don't have enough consistency from, you know, certain pitchers. And this guy's one of them, you know, 59% of his strikes, 49 of 83, walked four guys in 3 2/3, four hits, two runs, two earned. Long ball was also part of the problem for him. It's just a consistency bit. You know, we need to see consistency out of him. And he didn't give up home runs in that game, but it was just, they were just teeing off, and it just, you score two runs against him in the first inning, and I thought, uh-oh, this is just, the floodgates are open. They're going to drop like a five spot, and it's going to get ugly real quick. And then he kind of calmed down, but not really, because the control wasn't there. And every pitcher sometimes doesn't get some calls. It is what it is. You walk four guys, you give up, you know, quite a few runs. It's not looking good. It's back-to-back. Doesn't look great. And this becomes the thing, like, okay, which one of the starters gets bounced out when Sale comes back? It's not a question of if he comes back. It's now when, because the Red Sox are doing really well. So Eovaldi, lock. Hauk, lock. Martin Perez, they're not going to justify kicking out over Pavetta. He's going to be the one gone. That's it. I mean, it is what it is. I think the project is, I don't want to say over on him, but he just, I can't see him being consistent enough to be worth it. It's either going to be Pavetta out or Richards out. And I think Pavetta loses because Richards is at a little bit more consistency. You know, the mistakes he's made recently, just the long ball. So if the control continues to wane, I keep him lasting as a starter, especially if you can't even get out of the fourth inning. So that's my dud.
Jason.
Yeah, this is kind of the concern I had about Pavetta coming into the season. And I praised him last week because I thought that he pitched well last week. And this is a guy that was sort of back end of the rotation. You got him for nothing. Let's just see if we can. He's a reclamation project. That's exactly what he is. And let's just see if we can get the most out of him. You're going to have some starts where he looks really good and the stuff looks good and he's in command and he's able to pitch efficiently and, you know, looks like a good back end of the rotation kind of guy. And then there's starts like he had this weekend where he's kind of all over the place. The command's not there. The control's not there. And you're sitting there going, why are we even bothering with this guy in the rotation? And, you know, the one thing is going into the season, you went, you know what? We'll take him. We'll take any warm body who can give you five innings and not completely just crap his pants, because, you know, we weren't sure what this rotation was going to look like. We didn't know what Erod's health was going to be. We didn't know how Eovaldi was going to look, all of that. Now with the emergence of Hauk and with the seemingly on the horizon, you know, emergence of Garrett Whitlock, Pavetta's days might be numbered. Like I think he has to treat every start like he's going out there pitching for his job, because the fact that they're stretching Whitlock out and they're only letting him pitch every 3 to 4 days and they're not treating him like a relief pitcher tells me that they want him in the rotation. And I think we all know they want Hauk in the rotation too. And Chris Sale's waiting in the wings. So all of a sudden you've got a crowded 5-man rotation. And if Pavetta keeps going out there and the control looks bad, and he's only in four innings and he's walking too many guys, and, you know, his days are numbered. He doesn't have the luxury that Garrett Richards has. You see, Garrett Richards has this $8.5 million albatross attached to him, where even if he sucks, the Red Sox go, oh, geez, we can't just get rid of him because, you know, we don't want to eat an $8.5 million salary. So we got to find something to do with him. Nick Pivetta is making peanuts. So they, you know, they can find something to do with that money. It's not a big deal for them. If he doesn't work out, they can just move on. So Pivetta's got to figure it out. If he wants to stay in that rotation, he's got to figure it out, because there are a couple of guys waiting in the wings to take his spot if he keeps pitching like that. So he's got to be a lot better. He's got to get command of his pitches a lot better. He can't keep walking guys like this. It's, you can't be a starting pitcher and walk guys at that rate. It's just never going to work. So he's got to clean it up, because if Whitlock continues to perform, if Houck continues to perform, and Sale is getting healthy, waiting in the wings, his days might be numbered.
I was going to raise that question to you guys, but you guys went there all on your own, whether or not he could end up being really short term. There's just so many unanswered questions about him. How's he going to perform in Yankee Stadium with 50,000 fans once we're back to normal? And it's a very hostile environment, and we need him to lock in. How is he going to pitch in that environment? And Fenway can be pretty hostile too. Let's face it. I don't think he has the makeup. And when he had that outing, I don't know if it was his first start or his second start, where he's like, yeah, I couldn't locate my fastball, but my slider was pretty good. I'm like, you couldn't locate your fastball? like, uh-oh. And there's just no value in him, because we had a guy like Porcello who sucked every other year, but the thing about him was, oh, well, he'll eat innings for you. You can't even do that with Pivetta. He's walking everybody, and we're damn lucky we had a guy named Matt Andres that could just go in there and give you two or three innings just to right the ship and clean up his mess. And I would hate to see that happen every time Pivetta goes out there. I'm rooting for him, but the more I see him, the less and less sense it makes that he's going to be here long term. Now, if he's a religious man, he better say some prayers to make Garrett Richards be a worse pitcher, because that's probably his only ticket. Richards could be a short-term guy as well, being on a one-year deal, and he can be kind of expendable. But one thing I forgot to mention a minute ago with Houck, do you know who's happy Houck pitched okay but not super great? Chaim Bloom, because if Houck went out there and just shoved for six innings, how do you send Pivetta out there? You know, maybe you send him out there one more time and just let him get shelled to really put the exclamation point on it. But Houck just kind of, you know, laboring through that start at times is kind of a saving grace for Pivetta. So, you know, that he was a perfect dud, and the Red Sox have gotten really lucky every time out with him, that Vasquez was able to get him through that one start when he couldn't have his fastball, and he came very close to giving up a grand slam in Saturday's outing, and it died on the warning track. That easily could have been a 6-0 game at that point, and we were completely buried, and we ended up winning at 7-4. So just think of how detrimental it would have been had it happened. So hopefully he turns it around, but I'm a pessimist when it comes to Pivetta for sure. My dud for the series kind of falls in line with Jason's dud. I'm going with Hunter Renfroe. Now, I've kept my mouth shut for a while on him and just kind of hope for the best. I know we got a host on the midweek show that's super high on him, and there is time for him to turn it around, but he's right now playing worse than what his career numbers are. Hunter Renfroe is. He's hitting at a 184 with a 233 on base percentage, and Mr. Moonshot doesn't even have a 300 slugging percentage. He's got a 289 slugging percentage. So I don't like him. And when we have Renfro, Dahlbeck, and Cordero all at the bottom of the lineup, I just kind of wince. I'm like, ooh, where are those runs going to come from with those three in there? And there was one play, it was in one of the doubleheader games. We were talking about Cordero getting caught on the base pass. So did Renfro. He got caught in a rundown because he wasn't paying attention. And the catcher, I don't know if it was Grandal for that game, caught him sleeping. And what aggravated me more was that he didn't try to extend the rundown to try to get Devers home, who was on third base. And it just a terrible play. And we ended up losing. We could, if the inning got extended, we might have been able to drive in a couple more runs. And that was a momentum killer in that game. And what annoyed me more than anything was as soon as he was tagged out, he gets up, he's got this goofy look on his face. He sticks his tongue out as if to say, ha ha, you know, look what just happened to me. And I'm not a Renfro guy. That's a face you want to slap in those situations when he's goofing around and I don't like him. I don't like him.
I just need to take a moment to, like, if I could slap myself and people could see me slap myself, it's one of those things where I might have to, like, make a gif of this. Struck out 4 times in 10 at-bats. Yes, he had a couple singles. You get picked off, it's like, damn it. You get caught stealing, damn it. When both happen, that really sucks in the same series. What happens in the same game, what are you doing? And my issue now is with myself, I gave him rope, and I've used this before, and he took a little extra rope, and then he hung me with it, hung everyone on this podcast and everyone on the team with it too, because he's not doing his job. I foolishly compared Hunter Renfro to Mike Napoli. And that's just disrespectful. Mike, if you ever listen to this, I'm sorry. I am so sorry, because that is not doing you justice for all the things you were able to bring to Boston, because I don't know where this home run power. I was like, you know what? Maybe this is all it needs. You know, this is all this guy needs, is come to a different team, prove himself. And if he listens, maybe he'll get angry, fired up, and start doing damage. Because let's be honest, if he hits 4 home runs this series and brings his average to 220, we're not going to be talking about this anymore. But I don't think it's going to happen, because it's like we have our own Giancarlo Stanton. Strikes out a lot, doesn't hit a lot of home runs, and doesn't do too much offensively. Defensively, better, but getting picked off, getting caught stealing, not hitting anything besides singles. Yeah, you're hitting, you get RBIs and whatnot. That's great, but this doesn't look as bad as it really is, because the Red Sox are doing as well as they are. And that's the real issue here, is we can talk about Hunter Renfro similar to, like, you know, a couple other players from last year, and the optics of it this year just don't look as bad because the Red Sox are the best team in the American League. So if the Red Sox were 5-11, or, you know, the Yankees right now, they'd be calling for first off, they'd be freaking out at Chaim Bloom. No one's saying anything about Bloom right now, but no one's saying anything about Hunter Renfro. They're like, you know what? Let's just be patient. And I think that's the take. That's the way that they're going right now, is they're just going to be patient. We've only had 5 series so far. Let's just see what happens, because David Ortiz didn't hit a home run until May 20th. This guy is not David Ortiz, but I'm willing to give this guy a month to see what he does. I expect him to hit at least another home run this month. We're halfway through the month, so let's just see what happens. But Jesus, 0-for-3, 3 strikeouts in the third game. Like, oh God, that hurt. That hurts. Need to do better.
His one hit today was off of Yermín Mercedes, who is the DH. So that's how he got his one hit. But Jason, thoughts on Renfro?
Yeah, I mean, at least unlike Cordero, he was able to get a hit off a position player. That's nice. That's good. That's good to see. But yeah, I look at Renfro and he's got two positives for him. He has a killer arm. I'll give him that. He's got a great throwing arm, which, you know, great. Woohoo. And when he runs into a good pitch, he can hit it a long way, which he's only done once so far this year. So that's neat. Yeah, he's a strikeout waiting to happen. He doesn't take walks. He's a bad base runner. I'm sick of hearing about, oh, he's faster than you think. Oh, that's nice. You know, you can have all the speed you want, but if you're a dumbass on the base pass, then your speed doesn't do anything for you. Like, I don't know what he was doing out there. And defensively, apart from the arm strength, like, I mean, he's having trouble in right field. Like the triple that Magical hit today, that shouldn't have been a triple. Renfro misplayed that. Like, he should have been able to cut that off. But instead, he sort of like ran parallel to the ball and let it roll all the way around the wall. And Magical got a triple out of it. Now, it was a blowout, so it didn't matter. But in a close game, that matters. And, you know, Dave O'Brien will tell you all about, oh, he's, you know, he leads the league and defensive run saves for, you know, this from this year to this year. I don't care. So far I watched him and I go, you're an average defender with a plus arm. Neat. Like, not a guy who should be playing every day. Again, the power has not been there. This guy that didn't hit for power last year, he's, you know, he's the kind of guy he needs to run into the right pitch. Otherwise, he's not going to hit for power. He's probably going to strike out. So, yeah, between him and Cordero, that corner outfield spot has been a disaster this year. And like Charlie said, you know, when the rest of the team's going, you don't notice. And Kyan Bloom won't take any flack for it because, oh, he's only costing you $3 million. Who cares? Well, okay, sure. I bet you I could find someone for $3 million who is better than Hunter Renfro. I guarantee you could. So far, I'm not impressed. He's got to pick it up. You know, you can't hit 176 and just be like, oh, well, look at the throwing arm. No, it's not enough. And again, I have the same criticism for him that I do for Cordero. All I heard about was this guy's power. Oh, wait till Renfro runs into one. Oh, man, it's going to go to the moon. This guy hits nothing but moonshots. He has one home run. One. So between him and Cordero, they have one home run. Like, that's not good enough. That's definitely not good enough. And they both strike out too much. Renfro especially. Renfro just looks completely overmatched at times. Like, he looks like a joke sometimes trying to swing up there. So, yeah, he's got to pick it up because this series, he looked like he was just out to lunch. I don't know what he was doing, both defensively and at the plate. He just, yeah, he's looking like a guy who, there's a reason why nobody else wanted to sign him and the Red Sox were able to get him for $3 million because, yeah, that's starting to show.
Yeah, it's hard to really find a ton of value. And when he does hit that moonshot a week or two from now and everyone drools over it, I'm going to be the first person to roll my eyes and fart, you know, and be like, okay, yeah, he hit one. The only one I can think of that could possibly take his spot if the Red Sox do want to move on from him, I guess, is Munoz. You know, we talk about replacing Pivetta and how we have options if we want to go that route. But with the outfield position, it's hard, you know. And we all agree that it's probably not going to be Duran. So I think Munoz is really the only guy, and I think he's injured right now too. So unless a weird outside-the-box trade happens in the month of May, I mean, it's not super rare. They do happen, but I can't really see Renfro getting peddled away from the team or that out-of-nowhere DFA like we saw with Hanley Ramirez. So we'll see. Charlie, any more thoughts on Renfro?
I really just want to see him do a little bit of damage because it would suck if this ends up being the guy that I think he had a little, there were a lot more expectations for Renfroe than there were for Franchi, because Franchi didn't have a full season in. Kiki Hernandez, we already had an expectation of what he was going to do. He's already starting to do that. He's there with the status of number one player to prove himself in 2021 for the Red Sox. I don't know if there's another player that is quite there, including Nick Pivetta and Garrett Richards, because Richie's had a couple of decent starts in a row. Pivetta's, if he can, you know, take care of the walks, okay. But I can't name a game where Hunter Renfroe's been the man of the match. It hasn't happened yet. And there have been too many more games where he's actually been the reason why the team didn't win than he was the reason or one of the components of actually doing well. So I really hope he does well. You know, you don't want to see any of the players on your team do poorly. You don't want them to suck. I don't want him to suck. I want him to do well. I want him to hit home runs, because that's why we brought him here. So time will tell.
You know, it just kind of hit me. He's like an extremely poor man's Mike Trumbo, and he wasn't even a great hitter. So that's where Renfroe is on my spectrum. But before we do get into the Toronto series, and there's not a ton to go over because it's just a two-game series, I want to share one more observation. Matt Barnes only appeared in the first game. He had a rough game the series before in Minnesota, where he was bailed out by a spectacular diving play by Alex Verdugo. And Barnes, in the first game of the Chicago series, finally gives up his first run of the year and gave up a couple of hits, only struck out one. He's laboring a little bit, and I'm starting to notice just in the last couple of outings, maybe they're blips and he's going to go on another dominant run again. But these last couple times out, he's not finishing guys the way he had been leading up to these last couple series. So here's my question for you guys. Is he still the closer on May 15th?
My gut would tell me that he is. Yeah. He would have to have an absolute epic collapse over the next week and a half for him to be removed from that role, so to speak. So I still think he will be. Look, he's going to have blips. Okay. We praised Matt Barnes at the beginning of the season because he was lights out, but he's Matt Barnes. Okay. He's what, 32, 33. Like, we know what he is by this point. It's not like you're dealing with a 24, 25 year old kid who may have just hit that next level. No, Matt Barnes has been at the same level. It's just that maybe he's a little bit more motivated. Maybe he's just a tick sharper this year, but he's still Matt Barnes. He's a decent reliever, decent for a closer, but not the best. So he's going to have blips every now and then. That being said, like, unless Ottavino all of a sudden goes on this streak where he just looks like Mariano Rivera, I can't see anyone else in that bullpen taking that role from him. He's been the most stable guy. He's been the most reliable guy. So unless, like I said, unless he absolutely, to coin my favorite phrase, unless he pukes on his cleats for the next, you know, 3 to 4 weeks, he's going to remain in that role. He's still their most reliable reliever.
Well, Darwin's end's kind of turning it around too. So, I mean, May 15th, a while from now, and if he goes on a run, maybe a case can be made.
Yeah, I would feel better about Darwinson if he didn't walk so many guys.
Right.
If Darwinson didn't walk anybody from now until May 15th, I would say, yeah, sure, give him a shot. But he's too erratic.
I don't think so. May 15th, nothing's going to change. I think Matt Barnes, unless he just completely, throws up on his shoes, right, Jason? Six straight appearances, he didn't allow a hit. Six straight appearances, he walked two batters. Through six innings, he struck out 14 guys, 13 guys. You don't replace that. You just don't. And you're not going to replace it with Darwin's and Hernandez, who walks a guy an inning on average. So you have a guy who gave up his first hit, first run against Chicago in a game that, you know, we won 7-4. He's only had two save ops because, you know, some of the games that we've won have been blowouts, and other games it just hasn't been an opportunity for him to get the save. He's gotten a win in one of them. I don't think that it ends up being a shift, a move, unless Matt Barnes blows it multiple times in a row. Because even if he blows one, maybe even two, you don't forget the first six, seven games of the season where he's allowed one run, two hits, a couple walks, struck out 15 dudes. He's striking out two guys an inning. That's like Aroldis Chapman good when he started in the league, and he's doing that now. So finally, Matt Barnes is doing well. Darwin's and Hernandez has done well as of late. The problem is he walked, what, five, six guys in like three, four appearances? Like, that's, you can't live on that. And through six innings, he's allowed one run, five hits, six walks, six strikeouts. He's averaging almost a walk and a hit an inning. He's still only allowed one run. So he's good enough to get out of the inning. The problem is we got to minimize the total amount of damage you put on the bases, because you can't live on that. He's had just a couple holes on the season. He's still 24 years old. He's a kid. He doesn't turn 25 until Christmas. So the season is still very young. Matt Barnes is still going to be your closer.
I hope he is, because when you know who your closer is, there's a lot less questions of what to do with everyone else. So, but I just kind of noticed, you know, he's, well, it wasn't quite as sharp. So I wanted to raise the question. Getting into the Toronto series, like I said, only two games. Hyunjin Ryu will pitch tomorrow night against Eduardo Rodriguez. And this, I'm positive, actually, is at Fenway. And then on Wednesday, we have TBA versus Garrett Richards. And it doesn't even matter that Garrett Richards is facing TBA. It's like, it's basically Garrett Richards versus Garrett Richards. And you're just hoping, you know, we're hoping Garrett wins that battle with himself. But getting into the first matchup, Ryu has a 189 ERA, something like that. It's under two. The ace of their staff has basically pitched like an ace for the better part of the last few years. And he's going up against Rodriguez, who has looked pretty decent in his couple of starts so far. So kind of an interesting matchup, Jason. How do you, what are you feeling on that one?
Yeah, Ryu's been really good. He worries me a little bit. He's another one of these guys that doesn't have overpowering stuff. I feel like, for some reason, this Red Sox team struggles against guys that don't have overpowering stuff. I called it when they faced J Happ. They struggled a little bit. They, you know, there's just something about it. But at the end of the day, like, it's going to come down to, can they construct the right lineup to go up against him to at least stress him out a little bit, right? Get some guys on base, do what they've been doing, string some hits together. And a lot of it will depend on Erod, obviously. Like, is Rodriguez going to be really good against, you know, is he going to take a step back a little bit? Like, I still have no idea what to expect when he gets on the mound, which is a little bit concerning because I don't think he's at 2019 at Roto Rodriguez levels quite yet. He's got a long way to go. So if Ryu shuts him down, that could be a problem. And that Toronto offense scares me a lot. They've got a lot of firepower and they've got a lot of good right-handed hitters too. So they probably love seeing a lefty go up there, and, you know, they probably love seeing Eduardo Rodriguez. So that's going to be a tough one. It's one that I expect the Blue Jays to probably win because I think Ryu's just been too damn good. And I think that that lineup with all the firepower it has, I just, with Rodriguez not being where he is quite yet, I just don't see the Red Sox winning that one. It's going to be tough. So unfortunately, I see that as a loss.
Charlie, thoughts on game one?
It's, you know, what's crazy is that we're having this conversation about Eduardo Rodriguez not being the guy, but between Erod and Ryu, Ryu has been the more consistent pitcher. He's had three starts. Erod's only had two. Erod's averaging five innings. He's averaging six strikeouts. Ryu's averaging six strikeouts, six and a third innings. He's only walked, I think, what, two batters this season, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah, stupid numbers. And it's just crazy because he went lights out against New York. He allowed four hits, one run not earned at 6 2/3. They got the win. If Toronto can beat up Erod early, I actually think we'll be getting a split. I think Garrett Richards is going to win. And I think he's going to probably have one of his better starts this season. Just crazy. I know. It's going to be insane. Outside the box thinking, call me crazy. Corbin Burns, NL Cy Young, everyone thought I was stupid. Angels winning the AL West, everyone thought I was dumb. So, you know what? What's the worst that could happen? I'm wrong for the 18th time this year. Couldn't possibly be any worse. So, yeah, count them up, Jason. I've been wrong probably like twice this year, three times, not 18. But by the end of the year, it'll be 18. And that's okay. I'm hoping for a split here because here's the other thing, too. Ryu could do what Lucas Giolito just did, and then we're laughing again like we did this, you know, with the most recent series. I think consistency, though, we're lucky if we get a split. If we end up losing both, I'm going to be sitting there like, oh, Jesus, what's happening right now? You know, the teams that we always used to beat are beating us, and the teams, you know, vice versa. Everything's been inverted for 2021. It's just been a crazy year. It's been insane.
Bad news, good news with the first matchup. The bad news is we didn't face Ryu last year. I guess it just worked out. We never faced him, but we did face him one time in 2019. He pitched seven innings, didn't give up a run, so he shut us down. Our lineup is a little bit different now, so take that for what it's worth. But that's all the bad news, the shutout that he pitched against us. The good news is the Red Sox destroy aces. We didn't destroy Glasnow, but we beat him. We beat Barrios, made him leave the game with the bases loaded. And then we beat Giolito today, who apparently woke up on the wrong side of the bed, but we beat him. So I'm going to say we got a good chance. You know what? I'm going to be the homer tonight, and I'm going to say we're going to win game one. So take that, Andrew. And Rodriguez, I think will be solid enough. The other thing here too is, even though they have all this firepower, they are kind of scuffling. There's a lot of batting averages under 200. Vladimir Jr. though is killing it. He's hitting at a 389 clip with a 507 on base percentage.
He's torching it, dude. So he's going off.
He's lighting it up. Bichette isn't terrible. You know, he's hitting 266, four dingers, OBP just over three, so not great. But he's going to heat up at some point. Hopefully they'll kindly wait the two games for us to get through those. But yeah, and hopefully they don't wake up against Richards too. That would be terrible. But I think we could win both games.
Take that, Jason.
I mean, look, game two, I feel pretty good because if it's TBD, that means they're doing a bullpen game. Because you're not getting Robbie Ray and you're not getting who's the other Tanner Roark or Steven Matz. Roark. Like you're gonna get a bullpen game, which means you're getting like who's the guy who pitched a bullpen game from them earlier? It was TJ Zoich or whatever. Yeah. So you're gonna see him. You're probably gonna see Phelps. I know Phelps is there, he can go a couple of innings. Baruki, guys like that. So you should win game two unless Garrett Richards is a complete disaster, which is possible. But if Richards is at least somewhat composed and he keeps you in it, the Red Sox offense should feast on that bullpen because I don't think Toronto's bullpen is any good at all. So, I like I said, I don't feel great about game one. I still think Ryu is going to be a problem. But game two, I'm with you. I think they win game two for sure.
And their bullpen's worse because they don't have Merriweather, and I think they lost one other one. His name escapes me, but
Kirby Yates. They don't have Kirby Yates.
Yates, their closer's gone for the season.
Yeah, and there's actually a third one too as well. I forgot about Yates, but yeah. So even better for us. So if we can just find a way to get to Ryu, Keiko, not overpowering, and he just murdered us with ground balls. We were grounding to shortstop all day long. And third base, I never knew Moncada was such a great defender, but he was making all kinds of plays on that side of the infield. So hopefully the Keiko thing will serve as a warm-up for Ryu. But officially, I'll say a sweep, but you guys are saying most likely a split.
Split is possible. Sweep is also possible. Yeah.
Okay.
This is a good test for them because everyone deemed Toronto to be sort of that next team up in the East. So let's see. It's only two games, but it's a good short little test.
Who was it that picked Toronto to win the division? Wasn't it Job?
I think so.
Yeah, I think Job. It was. Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting. You know, Job and Terror were the outliers here.
I picked Tampa, and I still feel pretty good about that. But I think the Red Sox will have something to say about it. You know, the more we see them and the more,
Zach had the Blue Jays winning the wild card. So.
Oh, did he?
We did have that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Half credit.
Yep. We'll see. But my confidence, we're at 90 minutes, so we can't get into it. But my confidence in the Red Sox making the playoffs rises dramatically after seeing what the Yankees are doing right now. So, so yeah, we'll get there. But anyway, kind of a longer show. I had a feeling it might be. So for the listening audience, we will be back just kind of firing all these shows right out. I did the White Sox interview last night with Tony Marchese. If you hadn't heard that, that's the most recent episode before this one. And then we'll be back in just 48 hours to talk about what happened against Toronto. So we will be with you Wednesday night or your Thursday morning commute. Take care.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.